Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He dived, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone!
The Irish have come back!
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
And we're live at Four Winds Field in downtown South Bend, Indiana. We're later tonight. More South Bend Cubs baseball on WSBT Radio as they take on the Fort Wayne Tin Caps, the San Diego Padres affiliate. First pitch, 7:05, pregame at 6:50. This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds by Goshen Heart and Vascular. Know your numbers. Visit GoshenHeartAndVascular.org. By Ivy Court Inn and Suites with competitive corporate rates. You're in with Ivy Court Inn and Suites. And by Blackthorn Golf Club and the Blackthorn Card, just $99. And for $99, you'll get up to 80% off rounds of golf. That includes cart at Blackthorn Golf Club. I'm WSBT Radio Sports Director Darren Pritchett alongside Eric Hansen. He is the Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I feel like Michigan Notre Dame today by the outfit you got on. You got your green on already?
Do I?
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
It's 86 days away, so you're going to have to temper your excitement level just a little bit.
Okay, I will temper it, but I am looking forward to that game.
Can't wait. It's going to be a great day at Notre Dame Stadium. And we have a special guest right off the top of the program, Pocky Kelly, the wife of Notre Dame football coach Brian Kelly, of course, heavily involved in Kelly Cares Foundation, celebrating their 10th anniversary. Pocky, welcome back to the program. Great to see you.
Great to be back. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for your time. First off, what does it feel like to have 10 years under your belt?
That 10 years went pretty fast. We've been pretty busy, but it's we've been able to do a lot of things in that 10 years, so we've been really blessed.
I can only imagine it's been a very rewarding 10 years.
For sure.
So now we look ahead and more activities coming up. So let's just start with Football 101, which is right around the corner. Tell us all about that event.
We are very excited with our 10th anniversary and our Football 101 because it's going to be at the stadium, which it has been in the past, but obviously there was some construction last year, so we had some modifications. So people said, is it sold out yet? And really, we are not limited to our 600 that we had previously because of the venue that we had. And now that we have the ability to use the new Duncan Center and the ballroom and the new locker room, and it'll be a really huge change for some of these ladies that haven't seen it before, and the changes, whether they saw it before or not, if they did, then what changes have occurred. So we're looking for, you know, still, if you haven't registered, that's still open to do that online. And obviously the monies that we raised for that have gone really somewhat back to the local aspect of getting back to the Pocky and Brian Kelly Breast Cancer Center at St. Joe Hospital, but also in the Harper Cancer Institute, where we've helped finance our, you know, help people to pay for more research for breast cancer, you know, finding those cells sooner and whatnot, as well as the mobile unit for breast cancer research that St. Joe also has and the Riverbend Cancer Center locally here too. So having that ability to raise some of that money, but it's also our largest attendance event that we've had and continues to grow, and the sponsorship as well. But it's really kind of evolved into, you know, we really started this, if you want to know the truth, way back. You know, they'd ask me to speak, and these moms, they didn't really know very much about football. So they said, we just make pasta on Thursday nights. I'm like, really? You know, you've got four boys, and this is your youngest one, and you know, I'm not even sure what position. I think he runs over the quarterback. That's what he said. Yeah. So, you know, we evolved this idea, like, why don't we just have girls only and have the ability to have them a nice, safe environment. They're not going to learn it. They never would have learned it in probably high school. You know, maybe they didn't have whatever flag football would have been. So, right. And they've really, and I really do think that in the market of the world, women have really got more involved in football, whether they played it, you know, those
no
days,
question.
You know, so, that coming into, you know, some of the language they've really, you know, it's a learning experience all the way across.
Okay, before, I'm infamous for two things, injury questions and two-part questions.
Okay.
So I will dismiss the injury question and go with the two-part question. First, you mentioned registration and online. What's the website we're...
Oh, we're shooting for. So KellyCaresFoundation.org.
Okay, and they can register there.
Yep, it'll say upcoming events, and it'll say Football 101.
And they can do that right up until Tuesday?
I'd have to look. I think they close it on Monday.
On Monday. Okay, so you got until Monday. Second part of the question is, let's say my 88-year-old mom, who's a yoga teacher and still teaches, but not, she's not Brian's yoga teacher, wants to come to this. What is she going to learn, and what else is, you know, I know they have other things like a fashion show. Give us some of the highlights that she would enjoy.
Well, I'm here to tell you, you know, some people are a little, they are misunderstand what this is about. We started this with just come out and learn, right?
Yeah.
And then we had, the feedback was, well, we want to do some of this stuff because they never had the opportunity. And I'm telling you, if you would, the only age requirement is 21 and older.
Okay.
And we've had older being 70s and 80s. And some people, you know, they don't dress to run. They just want to see other people do it and demonstrate it, and not from far away, but right there up close and personal. And they've done the dummies, you know, tackling dummies.
Okay.
To the point where I'm a little nervous. Like, my mom did a header right over the top. Like, she just, she, in poor form, you know, she never tackled anything. So she went high and high and over is where she went. So you got to go for the middle, mom, down low. But they, you know, and watching these people, they have a blast. Not that they have to do it, because some of them just do what they want to do. Others are really into it. What was the other part of that question?
Some of the other things.
Oh, that we're doing.
Like, there's the fashion show. I know there's, like, food and...
There's food and there's beverages. We actually have the registrations, the doors open, like, at 5, and the actual function probably starts a little after 6, and that allows people to get parked and everything, and it's, some of them can't be there right at 5, obviously, if they're coming locally from work, but allows them the time to, you know, socialize and whatnot, and get ready, change clothes if they need to.
And coaches and players are out there. I just remember Mike Elston's voice in the background when we've been out there. I mean, he's coaching them just like his players.
Yep. And the thing is that it changed. Like, you may be in the Rockne group one year, and with that, you may go over the special teams or the rules that have changed this year, and or, you know, we rotate. We try to do a physical activity for each rotation and a learning, and then there's nutrition, and then the fashion show is really the wrap up at the end, where we have Under Armour and the bookstore provide some of the gear that either the coaches might wear or the new fans or the players might wear, whether it be the stuff underneath that they never would see, like on the field, unless maybe they're there really early on game day to watch, and, you know, I mean, those kind of things, and they love doing it.
Okay, my question then is, somebody that's been at 101 a few times, do they ever kind of get a little bit overconfident and say, listen, Pocky, I've got a play for Brian that he needs to run against Michigan?
Listen, I don't think you even have to go to Football 101 to get that remark. I get that down at Martin's.
We're talking to Pocky Kelly about the Kelly Cares Foundation and Football 101 coming up at the stadium, and maybe this is all taken care of when you register, but where do people go on Tuesday when they get to the stadium? Anything in particular?
You know what? When you register, then they'll actually show you where to park and what time to be there and what to wear or what you want to wear.
Okay. KellyCaresFoundation.org to register for Football 101. It has been a great hit through the years. And at Notre Dame Stadium, you can check out some of the renovations along the way. As we look ahead, next couple of weeks, next couple of months, a couple of events you want to touch on that's coming up involving Kelly Cares Foundation?
Well, as we go into the season and the kickoff, we actually start off when you would, did you bring up Michigan game earlier?
Yes, it did.
Okay, so we have our game day chase is that weekend, and that we will be in the morning to kick off that weekend. And then from there we...
Okay, what is the game day chase?
It's a 5K in the morning, because that's going to be a night game, and those people that have come to get their exercise, they can get their exercise, take a nap, and then go tailgate.
That's right.
And not have to worry about the getting in the traffic, right?
That's right.
So But after that, we'll also go into our Pockies playbook in October. And because this is our 10th anniversary, we've got a few different venues that we're going to be doing. We did a new one last year called Pop, which is one that we did at the stadium, and we're going to be doing that one as well. But we're very excited about this, celebrating these 10 years and having the ability. We're actually, for Football 101, we'll be meeting the $1 million fundraising marker for that.
Wow,
this year.
Congratulations.
So that's a big deal. And if you would have told me 10 years ago, that's what, you know, we didn't really have any goals set in terms of what this is going to be, but we've been able, with the platform and where God put us, you know, seven, eight years ago, I think that's why we were here.
Mm. Now, is there going to be Zumba during October?
Oh, you know it. And you can wear your Zumba shirt, everybody.
Can I? Okay.
We had record breakers last year coming in. Zumba, so it's still going to be there. You want to get you some shoes, you'll be ready to go.
is the reason the Pockies playbook is in October, is that when you're one of your anniversaries for being cancer free?
No, actually it's because it's Breast Cancer Awareness
Month.
There's obviously a lot of things going on then, but we have four different events in that month to try and whether it be educational or awareness, and we have a survivor dinner every year or two.
Okay.
But that's to get, you know, people on target to get your mammogram, and, you know, just a friendly reminder and have it a venue to talk about it, because some of them, you know, show them what's available.
But isn't your anniversary sometime during the season?
So my first anniversary, actually my second one coming up, let's see. Actually, just what's today? It was yesterday.
Wow.
Was my anniversary for my first one.
Okay.
That did 15 years.
Mm. Okay.
And then my 10 year, it's coming up. No. Let's see. Is it 08 now? Yeah.
Isn't it great?
No, it's 11 years. It'll be 11 years in September.
And that's the great thing. You've forgotten the actual dates because it's so far in the past now.
I mean, just from somebody that hasn't been through it, and I know everybody knows somebody that's been touched by cancer. Is that as cool of a day as I think it is? Or?
You know, one of the things I found out, which was a little kind of weird for me, what was my anniversary date? It's the date you're actually diagnosed.
Oh, okay.
Because, you know, the doctor will tell you, well, when am I healed, right?
Yeah.
And it's the five-year marker is the day that you were probably diagnosed, so, or right around there, if weren't sure until that final result came in. But so I've always kind of said, you know, my son's like, hey mom, this is just an excuse to get a tattoo, by the way. Hey, what are your celebrating dates for you?
Yeah.
I was gonna get a pink ribbon. I said, how about you get a college diploma, a degree, and a high school diploma, and put those on your arm. I'd like that more. If it's for me, that's what I would like more.
Pocky, since we have maybe some folks tuning in right now that don't know a whole lot about Kelly Cares Foundation, what is the platform? What are your guys' goals?
Our goals, well, you know, when we started, it was like more general in terms of our pillars were education, health, and community. And we've kind of revamped it to by improving health and education, it will, you know, to strengthen communities, which I don't think anyone would argue. When you have a better education and health systems, that in itself will make a positive. So that's really why we went this way. And I'm going to tell you, as when you were asking me about when I was sick, I happen to know that after all the stuff that I went through and all the people I've had the opportunity to meet that have gone through something similar, I said it before initially, and I really didn't know how true it was, but I said I had a red carpet cancer both times because I caught it early. I had insurance. I had people to help me get back and forth, watch my kids, all these things. And I didn't really have any, like, really big drawbacks from the chemo and or the surgeries, where most of the people that I've come across, they've has other difficulties that you don't want to have anyway, right? In addition to just trying to battle it. So as we go through this and you see some of the holes, you know, that people need to fill in addition to just getting healthier, that's some of the things that we've been able to do, you know, with Riverside or Riverbend Cancer, filling some of those things that aren't and just initial. And I think as in the last 15 years, things have changed dramatically since, like, if I was to go through this again, the protocol, I think, would be a little different. There's a little bit more post stuff where getting back into YMC, Live Strong has a program through YMCA for cancer patients or that have gone through to get back into a regular routine. You don't see what their new strengths are.
I'm curious, beyond the Kelly Cares Foundation, I think it's fascinating what your life is like as Brian Kelly's wife. Not so much as Brian Kelly's wife, but as Coach Brian right. Kelly's wife. I'm curious if you've got any funny stories about that. I'm sure you got a lot. Maybe your best story about being Brian Kelly's coaching wife.
I'm laughing because he would probably answer, like, you have no idea what it is to be married to her. He's like, you guys need to interview me. That's what he would say. But you know what? I think coaching in general, like, if you ask anybody, I'll tell you this. When we first dated, he said, we need to go through a whole year before we, you know, talk anything more serious, because this is not for everybody. And you know what? It's a passion. You know what I mean? And I'm from an all-girl family. We didn't have any football players in our family, but we loved it. And I liked it. I didn't know very much when I first started dating him, you know, in terms of what's the details of that job.
Yeah.
And obviously it grew and grew and as the, you know, he progressed through his career. But, so you want to know a funny
story? If you got a funny story, I know you got funny stories about the football or for the Kelly Cares Foundation, because you told me about the one where the wig flew off in the elevator.
So that's actually a cancer related one too.
Yeah.
So we were at a bowl game, and the staff knew that I didn't have any hair, but sometimes it makes. I probably wore a wig four times in both of my treatments, and one was this Christmas dinner at this bowl game, and I was in the, there's five kids on staff that have seen me bald with my cap on. So, and my kids are in the car, or in the, anyway, you walked in this, we're joking, and I said something kind of funny to one, kind of sassy, I guess is the word I should say, which elicited a clump upside my head, which proceeded to knock my hair out of the elevator.
Yeah, the elevator door's open.
The elevator door's open.
Oh, I know.
There goes my wig. And so everyone, we're laughing, and when I walk out to go pick it up, to go back in the elevator, it was deadpan. It was like a Christmas party. This elevator opened up into this Christmas party. And I just looked, and they don't even see what I'm looking at. I go, oh, yeah, and I grab my hair, and I put it back on my head, and I walk back in the elevator. And we are dying, you know. So Brian comes back to the room, and he says, honey, I heard from the security in the hotel. It's a little loud up here. What's going on? I said, oh, it was just belly laughing, honey. Just belly laughing. He goes, it wasn't the kids. It was me.
When you were mentioning that you didn't know much about football when you guys started dating, I'm curious, what was your reaction like when he told you he was a coach? Did that impress you, not impress you? Did he think it would impress you?
No, but you know what? I was working at Grand Valley State.
Okay.
So it wasn't like when I started working there, I think he was the D coordinator.
Yeah.
And then, you know, some time went by, and then the coach left, and then he got the job. And of course, here's my naivete about it is, like, why wouldn't they just hire that guy? Why would they even look somewhere else, you know?
Yeah.
In the hiring process, that makes so much sense, you know. It ended up he got the job, but in the end, you know, we kind of grew up as the head coach's wife. Once, another funny story is, you know, I'm 26 at the time, and some of these kids are 22. I don't know what to, you know, this is, I'm not very tall. So I don't know if they just thought I was one. I don't know. But once they found out who I was, that I was dating him, I'd come down, and it would like cricket, cricket. These kids wouldn't say boo. I said, Brian, this is so weird, you know. And I go, why do they do that? He goes, because they know, or something. You know, like they didn't want me to hear him say a swear. I don't know. They're just getting done with practice. It was just weirdly eerie.
That's great.
I mean, that's a weird one that was not, I wouldn't expect from most places.
It's almost like royalty walks in the room. Pretty
absolutely.
Cool.
Absolutely.
Well, I guess we kind of wrap things up. Football 101, or do you have something else? Your hand is up.
I'm just saying, Football 101, I'm trying to remember all the details. Tuesday, the doors open at 5 at Notre Dame Stadium, and then things get going a little bit after 6. You're going to get to see a whole bunch of cool parts of the stadium that normally they don't even let the media over in.
Why would they?
Yeah, why would they? Yeah, they moved Pocky over to a much better neighborhood.
Listen,
now with your box.
I don't want to see you guys dressing up in some pink stuff just to try and get in. Because you're going to have to shave.
It's been a while for me. And then... and they can still register at kellycaresfoundation.org up until Monday. But if it's after Monday, you need special permission from Brian.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you put a dress on, Eric, I don't think they'll care about the facial hair. I think you'll be good.
Okay.
Maybe he could be one of the models.
Well, oh, please.
Well, I've got to learn some more. I've got to learn more about Clark Lee's defense, so maybe I'll sneak in.
Yeah.
Very
That's
good.
That's awesome. Thank you, guys.
Pocky, thank you. Always great to see you. We'll see you Tuesday.
All right. Appreciate it.
Pocky Kelly joining us live here on WSBT Radio, live from Four Winds Field. We'll step aside for a moment. South Bend Cubs closer Brian Glowick. He's going to join us on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. And we are back on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Feed, brought to you by Budweiser, Goshen Heart and Vascular, Blackthorn Golf Club, and the Blackthorn Card, and Ivy Court Inn and Suites, along with Eric Hansen, the Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm WSBT Radio Sports Director Darren Pritchett. We're live at Four Winds Field in downtown South Bend. 7:05 first pitch, South Bend and Fort Wayne tonight. Game two of a three-game series. A dramatic win last night by South Bend. They won in 11 innings, 8-7 after trailing by 2 in the 10th and 1 in the 11th. They rallied to win. And the winning pitcher joins us right now. He's also number 2 in the Midwest League in saves with 9. Brian Glowicki from the University of Minnesota joins us. And Brian was a 10th round pick of the Chicago Cubs last summer at this time out of Minneapolis, St. Paul, University of Minnesota. Good to be with you. How are you?
Very good. Thank you for having me.
Well, take us back to 1 year ago. Your name has not been called yet. Did you have an idea where you might be taken? And just tell us what it's like when you hear your name called or you find out your name has been called.
Yeah, that whole day was surreal. I kind of had a feeling that I would go in the later rounds of day two, so rounds 6 through 10 was where I was kind of aiming for, or hoping for, I should say.
Right.
And got a couple calls from teams early on, like 4th or 5th round, just saying, hey, like, are you available for, rounds 8 through 10 for X amount of dollars? I'm like, yeah, absolutely. That sounds great. Mm-hmm. And those rounds came and went, and I was like, man, like, still nothing, huh? And the Cubs called me. There's their second or third phone call of the day to me. Called me early 10th round. He's like, hey, like, we got the last pick of the round. We're hoping to get you. Like, the scout that I was talking to, Shane Farrell, Luke Farrell's brother, actually.
Oh, okay.
Talking to him, and he was like, hey, like, I'm trying to get you. Like, this is our pick. I really want you here. I'm like, perfect. I'm waiting and waiting. I kept updating Twitter on my phone the whole day, and the picks would go by, 1 minute or so. And then that last pick of the day, right after, I think, the Rangers, goes by 1 minute ago, 2 minutes ago, 3 minutes ago, and then he finally calls me.
Oh.
He's like, hey, how are you doing? And I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, can you tell me how I'm supposed to be doing? And right when I asked him that, my mom starts jumping up and down, crying, all excited. And that was when the Twitter update. And he was like, yeah, man, like, we're taking you with our last pick in the 10th round. Congratulations. And after that, it was just a wave of emotions. A lot of phone calls, texts, everybody, people from home congratulating me. Yeah, that was just an amazing day.
And that was the last pick of the day, wasn't it? The 10th round. Wow, yep. How about that?
Wow. Now, if I looked at your college stats, right, you had one start in your college career.
Yep, freshman year, I believe. Yeah.
So were you a reliever when you were playing ball in Downers Grove, too?
In high school, I was a starter.
Okay.
I was, believe it or not, it was me and Zach Birdie. He's a first-rounder with the White Sox a couple years ago. We were... Oof. Our starters, it was once I got to college, John Anderson, the head coach at Minnesota, wanted me. He's like, I really like your presence late in games. Like, we're going to use you late in that bullpen. And then in summer ball, I started closing a lot. And then senior year, I was Minnesota's closer, and kind of the rest is history.
Okay, everybody talks about the closer's mentality. What defines it for you that makes you better in the ninth than other guys that might have similar stuff?
I mean, I'd like to say you're the biggest competitor on the field, but I know everybody that's playing the game, they want to win. They want to perform their best. Like, that's not really fair to say that I'm the best competitor. I just think that it's, you know, about remaining calm. You know, a lot of those games are one-run ball games, or like last night, it's a tie game, and you got to go out there, and you really can't make any mistakes. So it's just about not letting the game get ahead of you, remaining calm, and just kind of taking it one pitch at a time. You know, whereas like a starter, you know, if you walk a guy or you give up a double, it's like, okay, well, I can battle. If he scores, it's just one run. I got five other innings to work with.
Right.
But yeah, it's just kind of just executing each pitch and just taking it as it comes, not letting your emotions get to you.
So, Brian, is the 27th out different? Is it more difficult than the other 26?
I don't think it's fair to say that either. I mean, they're all difficult to get, especially as you move up levels. You know, the hitters in this league are very good, so I think any out you can get right now is pretty important.
Now, Brian Glowicki is our guest, South Bend Cubs closer out of the University of Minnesota. The Gophers are in the Super Region. We'll talk about that in a moment. But I've been through a 19-inning South Bend Cub game last year. It took 2 days to complete it. And you know what? That's not good for everybody, because it does bring a lot of pitchers into play that maybe have to throw more than you want. Sometimes you got to use position players. So I don't think 15, 16, 17-inning games are good for the minors just from an injury standpoint. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we went to these new rules and extra innings. And if you have not been to a South Bend Cubs game yet or listened on the radio, once we get to the 10th inning, they put a runner on second base. It's the last batter who made an out goes to second base. And then there's nobody out, and the inning starts from there. Both teams get the same luxury, and you keep doing this until finally someone wins, and that's what happened last night. And before I get Brian's thoughts on this, Eric, here's what happened. It's like Groundhog's Day. It's like Bill Murray and Andy McDowell, Groundhog's Day.
Yeah.
You put a runner at second base, the corner infielders come in, sacrifice bunt, runner goes to third, infield comes in. I mean, it's the same thing over and over. And every once in a while it won't happen. Last night we had Michael Cruz, who has 7 home runs. He came up with nobody out in extra innings, and he actually swung away. But it's just like the same thing. Now, Brian has been on the mound for 4 of our 5 extra inning games. So he can offer really good insight more than anybody else about these new extra inning rules. I mean, again, I like the idea of shortening the games, but this just doesn't feel like baseball to me. So as a pitcher, yeah, I'd love to know your thoughts. And you won't get in trouble, I promise.
I appreciate that. As far as it goes, is like speeding up these games, I really don't agree with it. Now, you know, from any games that have happened so far this year that, you know, only go 10 innings, that's great. But at the same time, you know, both teams have equal opportunity to score. It's not, like, I don't want to say better team. I feel like that's wrong to put it like that. But
I agree.
It is easier to score for both teams. And I also think it kind of favors the home team a little bit. You know, there's a runner on second base, and if, you know, an error is made in the field earlier, like a base running mistake by the away team, then, you know, you're two pitches away, or even one pitch away on a bloop single from losing the game or winning the game. So I think from just growing up and being a big baseball fan my whole life, I really don't like it, because I just think it takes away from the game. You know, there's, like you said, it's less strategy and just, okay, can you get the bunt down, and then can you either get a ground ball or get a little broken bat single?
And it's all about pitch counts nowadays, but for me, it's high leverage pitches thrown. Mm-hmm. And when you're on an extra innings, every pitch is now high leverage. So there's really no chance to take a break on the mound. I mean, you're pitching important pitches every time, and I just think that's just more stress on the pitcher than meat be. So it's very strange. I feel like you have to score 2 runs as a visitor to have a chance to win. If you score 1, it feels like they're going to lap you. So
like, it's weird. Just going off of that, like, the away team scores 1, it's just as easy for the home team to score 1. So like you said, like, away team needs to score 2 almost. Because then, you know, the away pitcher that goes out there for the bottom of the inning, there's a lot less stress on him. Because if that one run does score, well, then there's just a run scored and probably a runner on first base with one out, and you're a ground ball away from ending the game.
Okay, so how does the ERA work? Does that get charged to you if the person on second scores?
I get charged with a loss or a win, depending on how the game goes, but that run is unearned.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so last year you played at Minnesota and then went to Eugene, right, for short season?
Yep.
So what's that experience like? You get this college season and you hit the finish line and then you're playing more baseball. And I didn't realize you probably play summer baseball too, but I mean, this is much more competitive, you know, and higher stakes.
Different lifestyle,
Yeah, that's a lot of us last year when we got sent to Eugene, we were all kind of talking. It's like, we're in pro ball and we understand that, but it did kind of have, because we're in the college atmosphere being in Eugene where the Oregon Ducks are, it did a, kind of have a summer ball feel to it, but the competition was way different than anything I've ever faced in any kind of collegiate summer ball league. But then, like you said, like with the college season going to the finish line, it was a lot of ups and downs that year with emotions, and it was just kind of mentally exhausting more than it was physically. You have that you know, adrenaline rush of, you know, playing in the Big Ten tournament or your conference tournament, and then the another rush of maybe making a regional or getting drafted, and then more rush of going to Arizona and like finally being a part of a professional team, and then getting there, and then it's just like, man, like another 50 game, another 60 game season. It's just, it's draining. Like physically, you know, I think a lot of people held up okay, but mentally it was exhausting.
Your ERA, if I looked at the stats right, is way better this year than it was at Eugene. I don't know if you had a couple bad outings. I mean, it wasn't terrible, but I mean, you've really improved. What has changed about your game? How has it evolved that's lowered that ERA a lot at a higher level this year?
Yeah, just kind of like what I was just saying. I think mentally I am more prepared, more focused, and physically I feel really good. So just kind of both of those things on top of each other, you know, coming in strong off the offseason and kind of getting into the groove of things in spring training, tweaking a little bit of my about my mechanics, and then just, you know, coming here ready to play. I'm not worried about, you know, like any kind of expectations that coordinators or directors, anything, coaches might have. I just want to play the game, and my mentality has just been, let's just enjoy the moment. Nobody really knows how far your baseball career is going to go. So I'm just trying to live in the moment and enjoy every day.
And you're used to crummy weather growing up in Illinois and playing college ball in Big Ten.
Yes, sir. Yeah, that's. It was kind of nice, though, the past couple of years where you're playing indoors in U.S. Bank. So
That's right. That's right.
We've been fortunate enough to get out of the cold.
Brian Glowicki is our guest, South Bend closer from the University of Minnesota. We had Eric Ullman on the program yesterday, and he mentioned that the South Bend Cubs, I should say, the Chicago Cubs organization, the pitching coordinators change where he sets up on the rubber. They're having him use his fastball more against lefties. The analytics were showing that that four-seamer was going to be very effective against lefties. Analytically, have you picked up anything since that's been brought in front of you by the Chicago Cubs? Do you look at the analytics that much?
Yeah, we actually, B-Law, Brian Lawrence, our pitching coach, gave us our like player development plans like about a couple weeks ago maybe, and I was reading mine and it said last year my whiff rate on fastballs up in the zone last year was right around like 48%. So like, which to me that seems crazy high considering I don't really have, you know, I'm not a 95 plus guy, I'm more of a control pitcher. So when I saw that, I was like, man, like if I can get ahead with, you know, just locating pitches, whether it's off speed or locating fastballs, and I can beat guys with a 90-mile-an-hour fastball up in the zone, like, that's great. So that was one of the things I definitely was have been thinking about when I'm out on the mound, and then definitely using my changeup more. That's always kind of been my best pitch, and I always tend to get away from that, even though my changeup is probably better than my breaking ball. But, yeah, it's just B-Law has definitely influenced that as well. He constantly reminds me. And now I joke with him that I'm the next Trevor Hoffman. I don't know if he agrees with that or not, but it's fun to kid about it. Just like anytime I do have an outing where I utilize my changeup more than my slider, if I even use my slider that day, because I'm just predominantly using changeup. It's fun to kid about it and joke about it, but Yeah, those analytics are definitely interesting to read about.
Last one for me. I'm curious, you know, as you move up, there are some relievers like Andrew Miller, Jordan Hicks with St. Louis that'll pitch more than one inning. If you were asked to do that, do you feel like that is something that's kind of in your wheelhouse, or are you more comfortable one inning guy being a closer?
Honestly, if it's an opportunity, I'm going to be comfortable doing it. Our pitching coach in college, Todd Oakes, he always had the mentality that every pitcher is a closing pitcher. Your job is to go out there and get out of the inning with as few pitches as possible. So if I'm asked to go into the game in the sixth inning and go 6-7, then I'm going to go out there and try and close down those two innings. I'm not really concerned about where I'm at in the game. I just want to go in and get a job done and either hand the ball off to the next guy or win the game if I'm going out in the ninth inning.
See, I've heard stories back in the day when Lee Smith was closing for the Chicago Cubs. He would take a nap in the clubhouse. He'd wake up like the seventh inning, start stretching, and make his way out to the bullpen. I assume you don't have that luxury.
No, I always try and ask B-Law what kind of leeway I have, and I definitely haven't earned any of those privileges just yet.
All right, let's talk about the Gophers because, well, I call Notre Dame hockey, so Minnesota's kind of a hockey school, but you know what? Baseball's got some pretty good history, and you guys got a couple of Hall of Famers that played at Minnesota.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I've been following them around all year, and I just couldn't be more proud of those guys. And if I'm honest here, I really did not expect these guys to do this well, but I love the way the seniors have kind of taken that leadership role. And the freshmen have come in and they've performed tremendously. So hats off to those guys. They're having a phenomenal year, and I hope they continue it in the Super Regional.
And Brian's Gophers are traveling to Corvallis to take on Christian Donahue's Oregon State Beavers. So there is no wagering, of course, in professional baseball. That's a big no-no. But I would assume there'll be heavy interest amongst you two watching that series.
Yeah. In the dugout, you know, we'll be talking, and then all of a sudden one of us will look at each other and be like, wait, I don't like you right now. We'll give each other a playful shove, or, you know, we'll just remind each other, like, hey, you like, Ghosts are going to be going home on Sunday, or, you know, we're going to come into Corvallis and show them who's home, and that is. So it's fun. Me and Donahue have some friendly banter, and, you know, everything's all friendly. It's not like we don't hate each other. It's not that serious, but yeah, it's a lot of fun.
And Mr. Hanson, the last time the Gophers went to the College World Series, 1977, do you know who was on their infield? He's a manager in Major League Baseball today. Minnesota Twins manager.
I don't know who
Paul Molitor.
Paul Molitor, okay.
And, of course, Dave Winfield played at Minnesota as well. So there's
a
pretty
good. He played basketball, too.
He could do everything. Yeah. He's one of those guys that could have played everything. So, well, finally, what's your experience been like playing in front of these South Bend fans? I know as the summer goes on, the crowds are going to get bigger, but you've seen some 7,000 fan crowds already this year.
It's great. For me, it's weird because, you know, when I'm in the bullpen or in the dugout, I'm like, man, this atmosphere is very live. Like, these fans are into the game. I love the energy. And then you get onto the mound, and I don't know if it's just me or what, but everything goes black. And it's just, I don't really hear anything. All that I'm really focused on is me and the catcher. But, you know, I've had a lot of fun this year. The team's great. Interaction with the coaches, they're awesome. Yeah, just really not a bad word to say about this place. It's awesome. Been a lot of fun, and enjoy being here.
And hopefully you're not here much longer. You get that call up to the next level. That's why we're here. There's no doubt about that. But we've enjoyed having you here on the program, enjoyed watching you pitch this year. You won't see Brian pitch tonight if you're coming to South Bend, because you probably get at least a day off before you throw again. But thank you so much for the time, and good luck to the Gophers this weekend.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Brian Glowicki, closer for the South Bend Cubs, joining us. It is now 11 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Sports Beat continues next on WSBT.
One question, five answers. This is the My Five Question of the Day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Eric going through some medicals as we...
Injuries.
It's his life. Even when he's not talking to Brian Kelly, he's talking about injuries. He gave me some news that I was not ready for, so I'm a little bummed now. I don't know if I can go through the My Five Question of the Day. But I'll fight through it. All right, today's question, and I kind of stole this from Sean yesterday. He had a really good question for Rapid Fire, so I'm grabbing and
using it on you. If Notre Dame players were stocks, which you could buy low now before the season starts, that could provide a very nice profit by the end of the year, which means they did some really good things. Which five players would you choose? So number one will be the guy that you think, I guess, you would buy low and you feel like you could get maybe the most profit out of. One way of looking at it.
Okay.
Let's start with number five.
I'm going to go with Brock Wright. He is a sophomore tight end, and he's got two other tight ends that are really strong right now, Cole Kmet and Alize Mack. And then you have Nick Wisher, who's a fifth-year senior, so how's Brock Wright going to get involved? I just think he's too good to keep off the field. He's going to find a way.
This was a rapid-fire question the other day. Brock Wright, over-under catches for the year, 11.
Okay, I could deal with that.
Would you say over or under?
I would say I'd say right, just maybe under.
I had 9 or 10.
Yeah, 9 or 10.
Okay, we're on the same wavelength.
Yeah.
Number four.
I'm going to go with Avery Davis.
That was my choice.
Yeah, I think that Avery showed enough in the spring that he wasn't the flavor of the week, that this is going to be something that's enduring, that he can play multiple positions. The thing is, he's still going to be challenged by a couple of freshman wide receivers for playing time in Braden Lindsey and Kevin Austin. So we'll see how he fits once those two are on campus. But I still think Avery Davis brings enough to the table that he's not going to fade.
I feel better about my answer now. But you still pick three higher. If Notre Dame players were stocks, which you could buy low now and make a little profit by the end of the year, which five players would you choose? Number three.
This young man switched positions late in the spring. He was born in Sweden and played his high school football in San Diego. It's Jordan Genmark Heath.
That was Sean's choice.
And I think that Jordan is, you know, Tavon Coney and Drew Tranquil are clearly the starters. But Clark Lee's going to want to play some rotation, and Jonathan Jones is right now the guy kind of poised to get most of those reps. But Jordan Genmark Heath can really make a mark there and possibly be a starter in 2019 once Tranquil and Coney move on to the NFL.
Number two.
There's so much opportunity for this kid, and we missed about a week and a half of him in spring practice because of a little bit of nagging injuries, but it's Jafar Armstrong. I love him at 6'1", 213. I thought he had a really nice blue-gold game, which means nothing in the grand scheme of things, Junior Jabby Memorial Award. But I think that, especially if Dexter Williams isn't playing at the beginning of the season, as we expect, there's going to be opportunities for Jafar Armstrong. And this is from a speed standpoint, he's a former Kansas State sprint champion. You know, this isn't a guy that's, you know, kind of so-so speed. This is a guy that's pretty fast. He's got some size, so I like his potential.
And more than anybody else, the player, if he was a stock, you could buy low now and maybe get a very nice profit on this Notre Dame player late in the year.
Well, and I think I'm in the minority with this one, but I believe that this kid is going to get it done in 2018, and that's Brandon Wimbush. I think that Brandon Wimbush is going to make a big leap in his passing game and then add it to his running. And he's going to have to, because he's not going to have the offensive line he had last year. He's not going to have the running game he had last year. So he's going to have to make that jump, and I think he will.
That's the My 5 question of the day. Sports Beat continues next on WSBT.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune Sports Section.
Well, thank you for asking. Tom Noy has a column on South Bend St. Joe softball player Megan Welch. St. Joe, who's ranked number 4 in the state, plays New Palestine, the defending champions in Class 3A, Saturday at Purdue University for the state championship. Bremen's also playing for a state title in 2A. Tim Creason
They're
has...
They're really good, by the way.
Yeah, they
Bremen's
are.
Bremen's really good.
Two teams from the same conference playing for state championships, and Penn wasn't that way. Anna Rohr, former Mishawaka standout, current Notre Dame track and field All-American, runs the 10,000 meters on Thursday night, and of course, much, much more.
It is the top of the hour at WSBT South Bend.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Bears. Down to the corner, Jablonski. Three is good.
Andrew steps in. He's going to throw deep for T.Y. He's got it.
Flips to Jenkins. Three for the win. It's good. Villanova wins it.
He dives. It is a touchdown. New England wins.
Adios. Cubs win their ninth in a row.
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
And this is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat from 96.1 WSBT. Brought to you by Budweiser, Goshen Heart and Vascular, Blackthorn Golf Club and the Blackthorn Card, and Ivy Court Inn and Suites. I'm Darren Pritchett at Four Winds Field, where South Bend and Fort Wayne will play tonight at 7:05. You can hear the game on WSBT Radio. Pregame at 6:50. The gates are open, and people are grabbing their Jason Hayward bobbleheads. It is Jason Hayward bobblehead night. He is in his South Bend Cubs uniform from last year when he was on his rehab assignment, and it was a 4th of July jersey, so there's an American flag going around that uniform. So Chicago Cub outfielder Jason Hayward, his bobblehead night is tonight. First 1,000 fans through the gates pick up the bobblehead. So there are not 1,000 fans in the ballpark yet. So if you're in the vicinity, grab your tickets and pick up your Jason Hayward bobblehead. Sean Stiers back at our WSBT studios. We have Rapid Fire coming up in just a little bit here on 96.1 WSBT. And we've got plenty to get to, including we'll learn a little bit more about the Four Winds Invitational coming up in just a couple of moments. We were going to have Tim Firestone on, the tournament director, owner at Blackthorn, but he is tied up right now with a clinic going on at Blackthorn. Of course, the Symetra Tours Four Winds Invitational starts on Friday and runs through Sunday with the final round. We'll have all the details on that coming up in just a little bit. Sean, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Glad to hear that. I know from a baseball standpoint today, I see my X factor from a rapid fire or a question that you asked recently is done for the year. So thank you for allowing me to put the hex on that particular X factor.
Now, which person was that?
That would be Cardinals right-hander Alex Reyes, who missed all of last year with Tommy John surgery. He felt something on his last rehab start in Memphis, and then last Wednesday pitched 4 innings in Milwaukee as a starter, and the 4th inning his velocity went down from 98-99 to 91-92. That caught the attention of the coaching staff and the training staff, and he has a major lat injury. The tendon is starting to fray from the bone. Now, it was still attached, which is good. There was blood flow. Had it been completely ripped off, then you got a really, really bad problem. But he had surgery today, and he is out for the season for a second consecutive year. So this is one of the top prospects in all of minor league baseball, and a guy that the Cardinals were counting on to possibly be their number two starter coming down the stretch with his ability. He is done for the year. So they have a very deep rotation. It's one team that can offset a major injury to the rotation, but let me just say this. He's a guy that I could see starting game two of a playoff series. That's how much I think the Cardinals think of him. So my X factor is now off the board. I'm going to have to choose a new one. All right. So other than that, it's been a great day.
Yeah, I know. Other than the worst possible thing that could happen, it's been a fabulous day.
Well, it's just, you know, it's frustrating when you have an amazing prospect and he throws 4 total innings in 2 years.
Yeah.
So I'm a bit sad and I'm a bit grumpy now. So if I get grumpy during rapid fire, I'll apologize right now so
okay,
I don't offend you. All right, I'll just pout a little bit too at the same time. Well, since we can't get Tim on the phone, we're going to go to Memorex because Tim, of course, is a part of the golf show on WSBT Radio, heard every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. on WSBT Radio. The other co-host is John Foster, the general manager at Warren Golf Course at Notre Dame. But Tim, a couple of years ago, bought Blackthorn. He also owns the Blarney Hole over in Granger, the indoor facility. So a lot of things going on with Tim, doing great things at Blackthorn. And Blackthorn is hosting the Symetra Tours. Four Winds Invitational this week. There's all kinds of events going on, including the professional golf tournament starting on Friday and running through Sunday. So even though Tim couldn't join us tonight, we have a backup plan always here on the program.
Right.
I guess, most times. But I knew Tim's going to be very busy today, so just in case, I decided to grab 7 or 8 minutes of him talking about the tournament recently on the golf show. So let's play that right now. This is from a recent installment of the golf show, Tim talking about the Four Winds Invitational at Blackthorn.
How many times has the Symetra Tour come to Blackthorn Golf Club?
Hard to believe we're in our 7th year of the Four Winds Invitational. So it's just been incredible to see how this community has rallied around this event and how the sponsors have continued to support it, volunteers, the local media, spectators. It's kind of becoming an event that gets on everybody's calendar here. And most importantly, the amount of money that we've raised for Beacon Children's Hospital and all the great work that we've done here in the local community from a charity standpoint. So we could not be happier with what the event has become. Also, it's been terrific to see, you know, all of our champions playing on the LPGA Tour, you know, living their lifelong dreams and playing a small part in helping them achieve their dreams. So when you throw all those things together, it's really been a special event, and I couldn't be more proud to be a part of it.
Tim, I know most people understand this, but for a few people that might be tuning in that don't know, how would you describe the Symetra Tour and what it means to the people that play on it?
So the Symetra Tour is now the main path to for young players to play their way onto the LPGA Tour. And so basically you have young rising stars of tomorrow playing golf on this tour. There's 26 events, I believe, and the top 10 money winners from this tour get the full exemption onto the LPGA Tour next year. So it's kind of a training ground slash a qualification method to get these young players onto the LPGA Tour. And with our purse being one of the top purses on tour, if you win this event, it's very likely that you'll go on to gain your LPGA Tour card by finishing in the top 10.
And you're actually, I believe, 6 for 6 in that category, the person who's won?
Yeah, I mean, it's great. And then it's not just the winners. So you see a lot of players that are on the leaderboard every week that played here. And obviously that's led by Brooke Henderson, who's gone on to be one of the top, you know, 4 or 5 players in the world right now. I think she's maybe 19 or 20 years old still. And, you know, she was our champion 3 years ago. So we've had a lot of good players here. Brooke obviously has been the best. But every year we continue to see better and better players. And these players are only a shot or two away in scoring average on being on the LPGA Tour. So the golf is incredible. They hit it straight. They hit it far. It's really the putting that is the difference. Where if these young ladies can figure out the putter, they're more than likely going to be on the LPGA Tour.
Tim, let's talk about exemptions. You have the ability to invite a couple of golfers every year, and there's been some local tie-ins. Have you made your choices for this year?
So we typically look for a local player that stands out above the rest, kind of at that high school level, maybe college level. This year is no different. We went up into Southwest Michigan, St. Joe High School, Kaylee Rooker, who will be a senior at St. Joe in Michigan. She is a product of the First Tee program there in Benton Harbor. So it was great to see how that program has developed young golfers, and she's a terrific young player and even a better young lady. So we're very excited to have her in the field. The second announcement, I'm waiting for the paperwork to be finalized, but I can tell you that this is one of the best players in America from the state of Florida. At the age of 13, she's won over 60 national tournaments and over 30 global tournaments. So super excited to have her in the field, and hopefully we can make that announcement next week, just waiting on the final paperwork. But the age of 13 years old, so she'll be the youngest participant we've ever had in the Four Winds Invitational. Definitely one of the stars in golf. And, you know, and from America. I mean, a lot of the young great players are from Korea and Asia, but this young lady just beats everybody up every time she tees it up. So it's pretty cool that she'll be here in South Bend this year.
Tim, I can't imagine there have been too many younger players ever to participate in a professional golf tournament.
No, I mean, I think that's right at that age, at 13, 14, 15, and
wow.
This will be her first professional tournament on the Symetra Tour that she's been had an exemption in. So her schedule being in high school and all the AJGA events and all the other things that she plays in, this week happened to just work out for her. So it was it's a blessing for us to have a great young prodigy like that here in South Bend this summer.
Can't wait for the official announcement. Four Winds Invitational information. Tim Firestone, given all the details. How about our community? How can they get involved as a volunteer? What are you looking for? How do you take part in the event?
Well, it's a great question. I think the important thing I want to relay today is that you don't necessarily have to be an avid golfer to participate in the events that we have going on during tournament week. And that includes being a volunteer, which is a lot of fun. We have everybody that does it, not everybody, we have a high retention rate for people that do that. They really enjoy getting to know the players and being inside the ropes. But we've got a few events that are open to the public, some golf-related, some non-golf-related. So we do a daddy-daughter pro-am, which is the father of three young girls. It's my favorite event of the week, where you bring your daughters out and you get paired with one of the LPGA players. You play nine holes and have some ice cream and hot dogs. And then we have an event on Wednesday night called the Golf Ladies Clinic 101, which is we'll have 10 or 12 LPGA players. They have wine and cheese and music and just kind of a social setting where you get to interact, question and answers with the LPGA pros, and they do some instruction as well. That event was very well attended last year. We just started that one, and already sign-ups are going well with that. And then there's a new event that's not golf-related at all, other than you're in a golf cart on a golf course, where we're basically doing a wine tour on all 18 holes. So you get a golf cart, and you drive around the golf course on the cart paths, and you have 18 holes of food and wine samplings throughout the entire golf course. So we're calling that Grapes on the Greens. First year for that, but we're really excited about that event on Thursday evening of tournament week. And then tournament is free admission all weekend long. So Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, free admission to get in. And then we, on Sunday, have our 5K, which we do a 5K run on the golf course. And then it's kids' day. So from 11 to 2, we have face painting and bounce houses and all kinds of games and activities for kids on Sunday. So a very affordable way to spend the day with your family. Come on out and watch some incredible golf and have an affordable, fun experience.
Finally, Tim, a website for more information on the Four Winds Invitational.
FourWindsInvitational.com has information and registration for all these events that I just mentioned.
That is Tim Firestone, the owner of Blackthorn, tournament director for the Four Winds Invitational. Again, that was a recent interview on the golf show, so let me fill in the blanks on the 13-year-old that Tim was referring to. Alexa Pano is her name, 13-year-old golfing phenom out of Florida. And she will join Kaylee Rooker, a 17-year-old junior from St. Joe, Michigan, in the lineup of players, sponsors, exemptions. 2017, Panna was a member of the both victorious Wyndham Cup East team and Team USA for the Evian Junior Cup in France. She's qualified for five USGA championships, including the U.S. Women's Am as an 11 and 12-year-old. Are you kidding me? That's unbelievable.
No kidding.
In addition, yearly she competes in major college and women's opens and holds one win and two other top five finishes. In 2016, she became the youngest competitor ever in an LPGA Japan event. She was 11 years old.
That's crazy.
So, pretty remarkable story. Alexa Pano, 13 years old, will be at Blackthorn playing in the Four Winds Invitational as a sponsor's exemption. And also, we wish nothing but the best St. Joe's Kaylee Rooker, 17 years old. She comes from the First Tee program in Benton Harbor, and she now helps with that organization, getting more kids involved in the game of golf. So an all-around great story with Alexa and Kaylee involved in the Four Winds Invitational. It's free to get in. You park out by the soccer fields around Blackthorn. If you go to the clubhouse, that is the player area and the media area. You can't park there, so park over by the soccer fields. You'll walk right onto the golf course and enjoy some great golf at Blackthorn coming up this weekend. A $150,000 purse. It is now 22 minutes after 6 o'clock. Sean Steyers, Darren Pritchett with you. We'll start rapid fire after a timeout on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. We were just talking about the Four Winds Invitational starting Friday. Do want to mention that former Notre Dame golfer Becca Huffer, who is on the Symetra Tour, will be joining us on tomorrow's program to talk about her golf career and playing at Blackthorn. Right now it's time for Sean Steyers to host Rapid Fire.
All righty, Darren. There are 87 days to go before the start of the Notre Dame football season, keeping in theme with the last couple weeks. So, number 87 is Michael Young's jersey number. So here's the question for you. Which total will be greater this season? The combined total of receptions that Michael Young and Javon McKinley have, or the combined total of touchdowns for Chase Claypool and Miles Boykin?
I'm sorry to hear my voice on the video board right now.
Yeah, I can hear that too.
I'm trying to listen to you, and my voice is like annoying me.
You're listening and you're calling highlights. Yeah.
I'm just screaming about something. I'm not very coherent. All right. So total catches by Young and McKinley or total touchdowns by Cole and Boykin. Wow,
correct.
That's interesting.
Correct.
Boykin and Claypool, I could see maybe 14 touchdowns between the two. You always got to factor in the tight ends. So
right.
Total catches by McKinley and Young. Boy, that's really difficult.
And just for to kind of weigh this a little bit, the totals for both last year would have been four because, of course, McKinley missed all of last season, so Young had four receptions. Claypool and Boykin combined for four touchdowns as well last year.
I'm basing this on Young, so I'm going to go with total catches with Young and McKinley outdoing the Claypool-Boykin touchdown total, but I could see Claypool and Boykin getting into double digits, so I'm banking on Young maybe catching 15 to 20 catches.
Okay. So you're putting it more on Young than McKinley.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So McKinley missed all of last year. Had a solid spring, I thought. And they each had, Young and McKinley, each had four receptions in the blue-gold game. So, you know, how much you're going to weigh on that, again, you don't really know. And then, again, Claypool and Boykin, each with two touchdown grabs last year. But, of course, we would expect their production to really increase this year with Equanimee St. Brown and Kevin Stefferson both being gone. And those two combined for nine touchdowns last year, 5 and 4 that they had. Stefferson with 5 and St. Brown with 4. And again, we just, the way Brandon Wimbush threw in the spring, we would expect kind of, I think, I'm with you. The touchdown number probably between 10 and 15 somewhere, wouldn't you think?
Right. I agree.
I don't know how much will be Young, how much will be McKinley, but between the two of them, I think they'll go for at least 20 receptions, maybe between 20 and 25. So we're thinking along the same lines, I think. I think that I'll put the reception totals for the two receivers above Claypool and Boykin's touchdown grabs, even though I think we both think that they're going to see some increased production this season. Okay.
Yes, indeed.
Yesterday, we asked what Notre Dame football player you would invest in like a stock for the upcoming season. But let's spin it to baseball. The Chicago Cubs. Which Cubs player would you invest in like a stock, not just for 1 year, but over the next 5 years?
Baseball. It's America's pastime.
Go ahead and answer. I'm going to have to take a second to think about
okay.
that.
Okay. All right. And I knew you would. Maybe this is one of those, because I think we're going to – I was thinking after we did the question yesterday, I thought, well, we can kind of spin this to a lot of different sports. So maybe
sure.
I'll give you
That's
a heads
good question.
Up. Maybe I'll give you a heads up on some of these so you can think about them a little bit in advance, because they are pretty broad. Really. So, I'm going to go, okay, so just based on which player is flat out the best player, there's no doubt that it's Chris Bryant. I mean, he's won an MVP in the last couple years, but as a stock, I think the price of his shares would also be higher than anyone else on the roster. In other words, it would cost you more if you were doing it at like a stock share, right? So, he's probably close to his ceiling since, again, he's won an MVP and he's kept playing at a high level. You look at other guys, Kyle Schwarber playing a lot better this year than last year, but I don't know. Like when I look at Schwarber, I don't know how much more upside there is. So if you invested there, would you be gaining a lot over the next 5 years? I don't know. You could buy Ian Happ or Jason Hayward stocks pretty low right now. I don't think that I would buy Hayward. How much more upside does Happ have? I think a lot of people think that maybe there's a lot, but so you kind of weigh those things. I'm going with Javi Baez. The glove is great. He can play pretty much everywhere. He's trending toward having career highs this year in all the major categories, and you look at his last couple seasons, you can see an upward trend in his stats, and he's still just 25. They've got him under contract for the next 3 years, and I mean, if Addison Russell were to ever get traded, like has kind of been floated around this year, then I would think that would elevate Baez's stock as well because of what's there. So I would invest mine in Javi Baez of the Cubs.
Okay, so I guess I'm going with a little cheaper stock.
Okay.
So I'm going to give you two answers. I'll give you one off the 25-man roster, and then I'm going to go to the minors for another.
Okay, and that's what I was going to say, that you could kind of go to the minors too, especially since you've seen a lot of these guys come out of South Bend in the last few years.
The guy on the 25-man roster, I'm going to buy a little low now because he's a setup guy, and I feel like he might be a closer down the line, and that's C.J. Edwards. He's on the disabled list right now.
Okay.
Hard-throwing right-hander. So there's obviously value in setup men, but if you become that ninth-inning guy, your value goes up significantly.
Right.
So they've got Brandon Morrow right now. They had Wade Davis before that. They had Aroldis Chapman before that. So they went outside the organization to find their closer, and maybe eventually they stay within. So I'm going to take a shot on C.J. Edwards with that fastball.
Okay.
Maybe he can become a closer down the line. So that's my Chicago Cubs buy low guy. And the guy I'm going to buy low right now, he was with South Bend on the opening day roster, and he actually was promoted from South Bend to Myrtle Beach on Monday. And that's right-handed pitcher Corey Abbott, second-round pick of the Cubs last summer out of Loyola Marymount. Excellent control with the fastball, has a good breaking ball, but I love his cutter. That cutter gets in on the hands of left-handers, and he saws off bats. He has great control of his pitches. He's got a little of that fire to him that I like.
Yeah.
And I actually told him as he was getting on the bus after his last start, I go, I hope you will take this as a compliment, because I got to be honest, sometimes if I mention a player in the majors that played 10 years ago, some of these guys look at me like, I really don't know who that is. It's funny because there's a lot of players that say, I would not watch baseball if I wasn't good at it.
Huh.
A lot of guys don't watch baseball. They just play it because they're good. Which is fascinating to me.
It is.
And I won't say the prospect, but he's high up in the chain now. And I asked him about it. He goes, I think baseball's boring. I just play it because I'm good.
So they play baseball,
which
and they're probably playing
me.
The video game if they can get their hands on it. But they're not actually watching a real game.
But I told Corey Abbott, who I'm talking about, I said, you've got a lot of Chris Carpenter in you. You just got a little bit of that grit to you, that you got that look on the mound like you're ticked off at the world and you're just going to beat the tar out of the opposition. I just loved his personality, the way he approached his pitching. He's got a fastball that's 93, 94. I love the cutter. He's got a good breaking ball. So I think he is going to be maybe one of those Cub pitchers that's going to work out, and that's been a problem for Chicago since Theo and crew took over years ago. So I'm going to buy low right now on Corey Abbott as an advanced day pitcher and assume he'll get to the majors someday as a starter.
Okay, so Corey Abbott, your organizational guy, and C.J. Edwards at the major league level. Okay.
Not thrilled with the Edwards answer, but I'll take
a
chance on him.
I like what you're doing. If he does become a closer, then his stock goes up drastically higher, and obviously if he succeeds as well.
And I guess I didn't choose Miguel Amaya, the current catcher for South Bend, because you got Wilson Contreras at the major league level, so he's going to be blocked eventually. So I'm imagining sometime down the line, Amaya could be trade bait. So I didn't want to buy him because he may not be a Cub, so I didn't know if that factored into your answer or not.
Okay, nope, that's fine. That's fine. Okay, I like that. All
and
right.
By the way, Amaya and Jared Young were named starters to the Midwest League All-Star game today.
Oh, cool.
And three pitchers were named, Brendan King, Riley Lacy, who starts tonight, and Javier Assad. All right, I'm done. I'll be quiet.
And that's next week. That's early next week, correct, the Midwest League All-Star game?
Oh, that sounds right.
Or is it? Is it 2 weeks?
I think it's
from
the
now?
Week after.
Okay,
I think it's
right,
the week
yeah.
after. Let me look.
I was just looking at a calendar.
Yep.
I think you're right.
18, 19, 20th is the All-Star break.
Okay. All right. Okay, so a little bit along the same lines now. We're talking about buy low, sell high, and value and that kind of thing. Two hosts of the NFL Network's Good Morning Football show say the Indianapolis Colts are flying under the radar and could be a team to watch this season. So do you buy or sell that on the Colts?
If they were in another division, I don't think they'd say that.
That's, I think that has a big, that has a lot to do with it, I think.
If they're in the AFC West, they're buried. If they're in the NFC East, they're buried. I think if they're in the NFC Central, they're buried. NFC West? I mean, that's a pretty good division. NFC South's got Atlanta, Carolina, New Orleans. They're not better than them. And I know Andrew Luck sounds like he might be back. And let's face it, he can be a difference maker. And they've got Quentin Nelson at left guard. So, you know, that side of the line is going to be a lot better. But I just think they're in the right division that allows you to say that. Now, Jacksonville made the run to the AFC title game. I mean, they were minutes away from going to the Super Bowl when it didn't work out. Houston's getting Deshaun Watson and J.J. Watt back.
Right.
That's going to make them better. So there's still obstacles, but I still think you can make that statement because of the division they're in. If they're in the AFC West, I don't think they would make that statement because the Chargers, the Chiefs are going to be good. I think Denver will be better. Oakland, the whole Gruden thing, man, there's some weird things going on out there. So I just think the Colts are in the right division for them to say that.
Yeah, and Peter Schrager and Kay Adams were the two who said it, and Schrager noted how they have a pretty good-looking offensive line, which, of course, now is anchored by Quentin Nelson. They've got Frank Reich as the new
Heisman Trophy winner.
Yeah, there you go. So a lot of good things happen, and he says if they're fully healthy, if they were fully healthy last year, they would have competed in the South. And I don't know about that, because even with Andrew Luck, who's only played 22 games of a possible 48 over the last three seasons, I mean, they were still just a 500 team the last time they had Andrew Luck, and of course he missed all of last year. So yeah, I think the division has to factor into it. But again, I mean, if you look at the Texans, if they've got J.J. Watt and Deshaun Watson, then they're probably a different-looking team. And now they get Watson back. If he's healthy all year and Watt, and they're in the second year of a new coach and everything, then how good is Jacksonville going to be? Can they repeat? But at the same time, I don't think you can overlook Tennessee and Mariota.
That's right.
They've done some nice things. So I think if Luck is healthy, which is still yet to be seen, I think they can probably be around a 500 team this year. But they've still got a lot of moving parts. It wasn't just like draft a couple good players like Quentin Nelson and that, and all of a sudden you're on your way. They've still got some things to do with their roster that's going to take, I think, a couple of drafts and year two or three of a new head coach to really kind of get them closer to where they want to be. And obviously, Andrew Luck just has to stay healthy. That's the biggest thing for them.
Frank Reich is a very interesting hire. Really good offensive mind. Can't wait to see what they are able to accomplish. And, of course, you can hear Colts football on WSBT Radio this fall. Every single game on WSBT Radio. Hello.
That's right. Right here. Okay, so now The Oakland A's, they drafted Oklahoma quarterback Kyler Murray with a ninth pick in the draft this week. So what do you think he should do, Darren? Keep playing college football, which he says he's going to do, or sign with the A's for a minimum, depending on how high up the A's want to go, minimum $4.7 million signing bonus?
Oh. Well, I'm sure there's a way around the money thing. I don't know how that works. I'm not a lawyer. But the A's have said they're fine with him playing football, so there's a way to work around this. So I'm assuming that's the case. I think if I want to enjoy college and I want to enjoy the football experience, you play knowing there's an injury factor, that money can go away.
Right.
I actually got in the middle of a conversation with some South Bend Cub players, and they were talking about signing and some different issues. And I didn't realize you have to play for so many years in order to keep all of your signing bonus.
Really?
Like, if you quit after so much time, you lose so much of your signing bonus. I thought it was yours no matter what. But they can take away money from you depending on how long you go. So there is a factor. If he gets hurt, that could affect the amount of money he gets. So it's a really tough call. It's a personal choice. But if I was really good at football, having the chance to be the quarterback at Oklahoma would be very enticing. A team that they believe has a chance to go to the playoff. Even though I love baseball and I would love to be a baseball player myself, I think I would take my chance on Oklahoma.
Yeah, and I mean, he's not going to get the opportunity again. And there are other guys like Jeff Samardzija, remember, after his junior baseball season, he signed his professional contract with the Cubs, pitched in the minors over the summer, then came back and played his last season of football. And Russell Wilson, the whole reason he left NC State was because they didn't want him out there playing professional baseball in the summer, and so that's how he ended up at Wisconsin. It's interesting. It's interesting that the A's are at least willing to let him go out there and do it. But like you said, I would think that there could and should be stipulations in his contract. And if he gets injured, then a big part of that bonus would be voided. But I think there are ways for him to do both. I don't think he has a future in the NFL. He's only 5'10". He's actually smaller than Baker Mayfield or Russell Wilson. So college is probably it for him as far as football goes. But yeah, I would say do both as long as you can. And I would give it a shot, I think. Play quarterback and then go and play baseball in the summer. Again, as long as both sides are willing to let you do it, I think you give it a shot and try to do both.
Absolutely. Why not? Have some fun in college.
You know, and
boy, if I was the ninth overall pick as a baseball guy in my heart, I'm kind of second guessing myself now.
Well, and that's the thing too. Go ahead.
$4 million. Now that I'm thinking about it, I'm kind of changing my answer, even though it'd be cool to play at Oklahoma and be
the
stud on campus, you know, but boy, oh boy, the money sounds awfully good. I just know where the A's Midwest League team is, and I just don't really want to go there. That's all I'll say. I don't want to get in trouble.
You're not that thrilled about the low A option for him, huh?
Like the Penn kid who was drafted by the A's. I'm like, first thing I thought of was like, oh, it's home games. All right, I'm going to stop there. I don't want to get fined by the president of the Midwest League. Right. I better be quiet.
All right. Mr. Nussbaum out there listening to you.
I love you, Mr. Nussbaum.
That's right. Okay, last question for you tonight. The official NBA referee's Twitter account tweeted this yesterday. NBA Twitter has a lot to say, especially during the hashtag NBA Finals. And now we'll be joining the conversation. We're live tweeting Game 3, reacting and responding in real time. Join the hashtag RefWatchParty with us on Twitter. So that is, again, from the NBA referees Twitter account. They're going to be live tweeting during Game 3 tonight. So what do you think about that? Referees live tweeting during Game 3 of the NBA Finals tonight.
I like following Twitter during games. I do it during Notre Dame football games, but that just doesn't excite me a whole lot because the officiating is so uneven in the NBA, I mean, you can carry the ball, you can walk with the ball. It's just not enjoyable for me. So when an NBA game is on the television at my house, it's just kind of on for background noise. I would probably have a baseball game on tonight if I was actually home and wouldn't watch the finals. So I got to be honest, the whole Twitter thing is not very exciting. But I would say for a diehard fan that gets ticked off at the officiating, they might find it very interesting.
It's going to be interesting to see what they're going to tweet, because, I mean, you wouldn't think that as actual officials that they're going to be second-guessing things that are going on the floor. And, I mean, that's the most interesting stuff to tweet about. Is it? I mean,
yes.
When you have controversial calls. So, I mean, you wouldn't want your officials, if this is the official Twitter handle of the NBA, you wouldn't want them second-guessing the guys out on the floor. And there have been, obviously, some pretty uneven officiating type things going on. So I'll keep an eye on it and see what they say. But I just can't imagine that they're going to tweet anything that's that outlandish or anything. So again, the hashtag is #RefWatchParty, and the Twitter handle is @OfficialNBARefs. If you're interested or if anyone's interested, that's what I want to know. Are they actually going to be critical, critique anything? I mean, that's how far out on a limb are they going to go? You wouldn't think that they'd go that far.
I don't either. Yeah. I'd be shocked. But you know what? Maybe NBA fans will like it.
Maybe so.
And maybe the Warriors win tonight, and it's a short series, and we don't have to worry about it anymore.
LeBron James is due for another big game, though, tonight, because he's gone about every other game 40-plus points over the course of this whole postseason. He had 29 the other day, coming off 51 in Game 1.
Sean, the bottom line is he'll be burning LeBron jerseys soon.
Oh, you think he's gone, huh?
Well, you would think anyway, but we'll see. But there's a good chance there'll be burning in the city streets again. And
that's true.
Everybody won't like LeBron again.
That's true. All right, that's all right. We've got tonight.
That's going to do it for Rapid Fire Sports Beat tonight. As always, brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. Goshen Heart and Vascular. Know your numbers. Visit GoshenHeartAndVascular.org. Blackthorn Golf Club and the Blackthorn Card. And Ivy Court Inn and Suites. With competitive corporate rates, you're in with Ivy Court Inn and Suites. Sean, thank you. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Sounds good.
South Bend Cubs baseball after the break on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.